You know, when I open this book, it is so beautiful. It's a great treasure chest of lovely jewels of splendor and magnificence. And when I open it, I see these beautiful jewels, these beautiful treasures. Now, a person that don't understand jewels, they probably couldn't see that because you get a jewel and it's not, it's in the rough. You know, you got a diamond, it's in the rough. You might not recognize it. Like over in the Carolinas, for instance, I remember someone talking about a man that had made his doorstep out of a big stone, a huge stone. Had made his doorstep out of it. And one day a man came by that was a jeweler and recognized that it was a huge ruby. And that man was using it for a doorstep. And that this was a tremendous ruby. Now, see, that's the way it is. If you look at this thing in the natural, see, you're not going to see it. But when I look at that, the radiance of revelation just sparkles and just comes out of there everywhere. And I look and it's just a glow by the revelational unveiling of its beauty. And it just thrills my soul. I don't know where to start or even what to do. You know, when I open this book, it's so beautiful. It's so beautiful. Let's start here in chapter 31 of the book of Job. I made a covenant with mine eyes. Why then should I think upon a maid? For what portion of God is there from above? And what inheritance of the Almighty from on high? Is not destruction to the wicked and a strange punishment to the workers of iniquity? Doth not he see my ways and count all my steps? If I have walked with vanity, or if my foot hath hasted to deceit, let me be weighed in an even balance, that God may know mine integrity. If my step hath turned out of the way, and mine heart walked after mine eyes, and if any blot hath cleaved to mine hands, then let me sow and let another eat, yea, let my offspring be rooted out. If mine heart have been deceived by a woman, or if I have laid wait at my neighbor's door, and let my wife grind unto another, and let others bow down upon her, well, this is a heinous crime. Yea, it is an iniquity to be punished by the judges, for it is a fire that consumeth to destruction, and would root out all mine increase. If I did despise the cause of my manservant or of my maidservant when they contended with me, what then shall I do when God riseth up? And when he visiteth, what shall I answer him? Did not he that make me in the womb make him? And did not one fashion us in the womb? If I have withheld the poor from their desire, or have caused the eyes of the widow to fail, or have eaten my morsel myself alone, and the fatherless hath not eaten thereof. For from my youth he was brought up with me as with a father, and I have guided her from my mother's womb. If I have seen any perish for want of clothing, or any poor without covering, if his loins have not blessed me, and if he were not warmed with the fleece of my sheep, if I have lifted up my hand against the fatherless, when I saw my help in the gate, then let mine arm fall from my shoulder blade, and mine arm be broken from the bone. For destruction from God was a terror to me, and by reason of his highness I could not endure. If I have made gold my hope, or have said to the fine gold, thou art my confidence, if I have rejoiced because my wealth was great, and because mine hand hath gotten much, if I beheld the sun when it shined, or the moon walking in brightness, and my heart hath been secretly enticed, or my mouth has kissed my hand, this also were iniquity to be punished by the judge, for I should have denied the God that is above. If I rejoiced at the destruction of him that hated me, or lifted up myself when evil found him, neither have I suffered my mouth to sin by wishing a curse to his soul. If the man of my tabernacle said not, oh, that we had of his flesh, we cannot be satisfied. The stranger did not lodge in the street, but I opened my door to the traveler. If I covered my transgressions as Adam, by hiding mine iniquity in my bosom, Did I fear a great multitude, or did the contempt of families terrify me, that I kept silent and went not out of the door? Oh, that one would hear me. Behold, my desire is that the Almighty would answer me, and that mine adversary had written a book, surely I would take it upon my shoulder and bind it as a crown to me. I would declare unto him the number of my steps, as a prince would I go near unto him. If my land cried against me, or that the forest likewise thereof complained, if I have eaten the fruits thereof without money, or have caused the owners thereof to lose their life, let thistles grow instead of wheat, and cockles instead of barley. The words of Job are ended. Derision and such suffering, and he was such a great man of intelligence and ability that even reading his writings, it's hard to even understand what he's saying unless you can be real perceptive as to the depths of the things of God. But here he's offering reproof to the men that accuse him. He is clarifying the fact that he is clean. That is, he is using this as a matter of fact in his life, that he is clean. And he's clarifying this to the listening ears, that I am clean, that I've done no wrong. I haven't sinned against God, he was trying to say, or against man. I've not done anything wrong. I have not lusted after women, he said. I've not kissed my hands as to say, how great thou art, Job, in your accomplishments. And all these things he goes on to say, if I rejoice because my wealth was great and because my hand hath gotten much, he said, then this is something that the judges ought to punish. I ought to have to go before the judges of Israel, he said, and they should punish me. If I'd walked in the brightness of the sun or the moon, that as into the glory of my own thinking, of my own doing, as to my own wealth, if I had shown out in these things, Job said, then I should be punished. But he clarifies things in such a great way. In his enumeration, he brings in even the furrows of the ground that's been plowed, that they could not witness against him. That even the furrows that the plow broke up, he said, the seed that I dropped in, that even the furrows that produced something for me out of the earth could not complain against me, because what they produced I shared with the orphans and the widows, and I gave unto the needy. So even they could not testify unto God, saying that God thou hast made me, and we have produced, and Job has took these things and squandered. So he justifies himself in every way as to point out what is his justification and righteousness. And of course, these people that witnessed against Job, there was no way that they could condemn him. Their understanding, their ability, was not an equality with Job. They couldn't do it. Job, though they had wisdom, they did not know suffering. Job both knew suffering and wisdom. You know, this is the beauty of what we're doing for God. We know wisdom because wisdom comes to us. Wisdom is presented to me. Wisdom is presented to you. And we know wisdom. And the Bible teaches all of them that are born of God are of a good understanding. But the thing that we are not acquainted with is the sufferings. That's the thing that Paul spoke of. I am determined, or I desire, or I want to know Christ in the fellowship of his suffering, being made conformable unto his death, that I may know him in the power of his resurrection. God coming down in a human body, he came down into this world to suffer. That's why he came down into the world. He came here to suffer. He already had wisdom. God knew wisdom. God knew all of the great things of wisdom. He was wisdom. He is wisdom. He's always been wisdom. But the thing that God wanted to know was suffering. And God could not suffer. There was no way that God could suffer. So then God had to come up with some plan. He had to devise a way or a plan to where he could make himself a human body, enter into that human body, and subject that human body to suffering, to bring it to suffering, because in God's world there was no such thing as suffering, which means that God in his state of being could never know the opposite side of God. Now, this is what makes God so exceedingly great. See, God
could never know the opposite side of himself. Now, you know the opposite side of you. You know both good and bad of you. And that gives you a more wholesome life. But see, God, there was no way that God could know the other side of himself. The reason is because there was no other side of God's self. So he could not know suffering. He could not know poverty. He could not know shame. He could not know hunger and starvation and those kind of things. So then God devised a plan whereby he would know something outside of himself. As to what that would be outside of himself, which would be impossible, and yet he did it. God devised a plan, and God brought into existence that which was not existent, and that which could never be existent, and yet he brought it into existence and made it. And that's how you and I got into the picture. So then God making a human being, God making you and I, he made us a human being. He brought us into existence when we did not exist. God brought us into existence by creating the atomic particles. And by the act of creation, God brought into existence something that did not exist or could not exist. See, this is the greatness of God. God does the impossible. You and I cannot do the impossible. Satan cannot do the impossible. But God, he does the impossible. He does that which can't be done. That's why he is God. Scientists cannot do it. Scientists, with all of their intellectual brilliance that Satan gives them, or that true brilliance that God shares with them, by all of this ability, they cannot create one tiny atomic particle. Not one. With all of their brilliance, with all the power that Lucifer's got, he cannot create one tiny thing. He has no power to create. Man cannot create. So then, knowing this, then he can only work with what God has created. Now he can take you, he can take me, he can work with us, he can change our forms, he can change our features. Satan can cause death to work on me or to work on you, and you will change from your youth. And you'll begin to change into age as an aged one. And then you'll begin to lose all of your radiance and all of that beauty of that tender-like skin as a little baby will begin to leave you because Satan puts his hands on you and you become defiled. See, you wither, you die, you grow old, all because of one reason. And that's because Satan touches you. I don't know whether you're familiar with what they call touch-me-nots, but when I was a little boy, I'd go up to a touch-me-not. It would be so beautiful. The little old petals would be out so lovely. And I'd walk up and I'd touch it. When I'd touch it, it just began to fold up immediately. I could watch it as it began to fold up. Because it was a touch-me-not. See, God's people are a touch-me-not. You can't touch God's people. As long as you are in your sinful condition, you cannot touch God's people. He speaks of it in one place saying, "Touch not mine anointed." And he speaks in another place saying that no one can touch them or lay anything to their charge. And Jesus, when he resurrected from the tomb, even to his mother, as her being in a natural condition, he said, "See that you touch me not." See, because we are holy, we are godly, we are pure in the sight of God. We are great and mighty gods that have been separated from that world out yonder and put into a world of godliness. And we are touch-me-nots. You understand what I'm saying? Job gives himself here in the same condition as a touch-me-not. You understand what I'm saying? He gives himself in a pure way as to say, "You can't touch me. You can't touch me." But when God came near, Job realized his mistake. That when you are in that world, you're not a touch-me-not. You must be born of God. You must be in God. See, and then when you're in God, then you are the touch-me-not. Now, it is a true fact that here Job's, he has a wisdom with suffering. They have a wisdom without suffering. God wanted to have his wisdom with suffering. And to do that, he made you and I. And, of course, that's where the little touch-me-nots come in. So then God, doing this thing, bringing it to pass that we might come into existence, God bringing the impossible, doing the impossible, whereas we can't do it, scientists can't do it, but God does it. See, Satan cannot do that. All he can do is work with that's in this world, and when he touches it, it withers up. It begins to age. It goes to death. We find ourselves dying. Not because God wanted it that way. He wanted us to be young and youthful. He wanted us to have the skin as a little baby. That is, he wanted us to just be beautiful to where nothing could ever defile us. Nothing could ever touch us. And we'd be like a rose in full blossom. This was God's way. I am the Prince of Life. I come that you might have life and that you might have it more abundantly. But Satan touching us causes this horrible thing. It causes death. God has nothing to do with it. God, though he brought us into existence, he has nothing to do with the sorrow, nothing to do with the heartaches, nothing to do with infirmities. He only made him a body, got into the body, come down into this world in the midst of us so that he could feel the infirmities of this human body as Satan probed at us. Knowing that light and darkness has no fellowship, Satan never at any time gets near God, except through the shed blood of Jesus as to grace. As in the days of Job, when he come up before God, and God said, have you considered my servant Job? So then God wanting to feel the infirmities that we had been subjected to, God wanting to know what sin was like, wanting to know what suffering was like, wanting to know what heartaches was like, God wanted to know the other side of life. He was life. But he wanted to know the other side of life. What would it be like if you was out of the radius of life? If you was out of the confines of life? Out of the protections of life? What would it be like? What would that be like outside of God? And of course he couldn't know that. Because how could God know that outside of God? Because light and darkness had no fellowship. What would darkness be like? What would it be like to dwell in darkness? What would it be like to be out of God? And so then God in his great wisdom created the world. He made the world. He come forth and he made the world. When he come forth, the Bible said there was darkness upon the face of the deep. Because outside of God is darkness. Outside of God is an eternal loss. Outside of God is what we refer to as the bottomless pit. Outside of God there is a nothing. That is a lot closer to people than they think. I speak of this a lot of times concerning space. Step off of this world and you're out there. Where's the bottom, the top, the ends? Where are the boundaries of confine? See, so you step into an infinity. God came down and suffered. God came down and learned what it was to suffer. Now he's the great God of wisdom with suffering. These men spoke to Job. They accused Job, and they were great men of wisdom. But they didn't know suffering. And when they tried to talk to Job, they couldn't overcome Job. Like it was said of Stephen. Stephen's was that of the suffering. And the Bible said when they saw Stephen's face, it was that as of an angel. See, the sufferings of Moses, when Moses stood on the mountain, when Moses spoke, and when God communicated with him, it was all one and the same. Because the Bible said they that have suffered have ceased from sin. The body of Moses had been through so many horrible things. So much horrible sufferings. Until Moses was one with God. He was rejected of his countrymen. He was persecuted. He was driven. That's why Paul became so close to God. He came to be a partner with God because he suffered. Then Abraham, the reason that Abraham did that, he was a man of suffering. He was cast out. He was driven out. He had to sojourn in a strange country. Always in problems. Always suffering. That's why that the church world today is cast out of Egypt. It's driven out of Egypt. It's away from the garlic and the onions. You can't go borrow money like the other people can borrow money. The world loves its own. You can't go get bread. You can't go get credit. You can't go get favor. You know, it's got to be God in your life for you to get anything. A poor man is at a total loss if he's a Christian. Because if he becomes a Christian, His that are total loss, the world won't have nothing to do with it. They'll reject it. Every move that God has ever brought up, from the Baptist to the Methodist to the Pentecostals, whatever the move was that was a real God move in the origin, always it was rejected. It was across the tracks. They had to fight their way up. And of course, when they get up and begin to compromise and become a cage of every unclean and hateful bird, and all of the good is pushed out, then the world claims that it takes it as it was back there in the days when they dug the wells, and they would take the wells away from Jacob and Abraham, the water. So then, if you're going to excel in this world, you're going to have God to make the way for you. They have nothing for us in the world. See, and here is Job's persecutors. They're persecuting Job because they are of the world. But Job is not of the world. Job is in a great derision. Job is in a great suffering. See, Job being a type of the Lord Jesus. Job being that's been exposed to the suffering. That's why God came in the human form, to suffer, to feel the infirmities. God wanted Job to feel the infirmities of the poor and of the weak, to share with them. That's why the world doesn't share with you. They don't feel those infirmities. But see, we do feel the infirmities. This is what will make us the head of the nation, the head of the entire world, because we feel the infirmities of humanity. We know how to rule humanity. It is God within us. It is the compassion of God within us. See, this is the thing that Job excelled in. All of the men of God down through life, God has subjected them to suffering. Paul said, I want to know him in the fellowship of his suffering. The church world is ousted from Egypt so that they can suffer, so they can feel the infirmities. This way God comes nearer. The Bible said that his spirit is nigh to them that be of a contrite spirit and a broken heart. A lot of us want to get close to God, but we don't want to fast. We don't want to pray. We don't want to submit ourselves to God. We don't want to conform to God, but yet we want that glory. We want the blessings. We want the riches. We want the splendor. We want the magnificence of God. You know, we're going to have to come to the place of suffering, to where we desire to know him in the fellowship of his suffering. This morning, sitting up here in Bill's office, see, the Holy Spirit come down. I talk with them. The revelation of the Lord come forth. Now, I could come in your midst, it could be the same. But that can't be without suffering. That can't be without self-denial. That can't be. See, because this man must die. This body must submit. This body must be taken out of the way. This individual must be no more. That it can be Christ that's living, Christ that's talking, Christ that's projecting himself. See, and then we get into the deep waters, the deep mysteries of God. We wade out into the other world. Clear away from the people. We can walk clear out of their sight. The Bible said, and Jesus just ascended and went out of their sight. See, and we can just walk clear out of their sight. As to their eyes of understanding, they can't even see us anymore. They don't know where we're at. They're confused. They can't tell where we're at anymore because we just walk off and leave. See, this is the way it was with Job and his wisdom. There wasn't but one person here that could communicate with Job, and he was a young man. But he had given himself to God, and he was justifying God. And he didn't seek to accuse anyone. He just justified God. And this was one that God accepted. See, Job answered them as they could not withstand Stephen, so they could not withstand Job. Job had wisdom with suffering. If I have wisdom with suffering, then is my wisdom 10 times greater than it could ever be, because I know both sides of life. God was determined that he was to know both sides. That within the confines of God, that out of the confines of God. God did that. We say, why would God do that? Because when God sought to create, he brought himself into something that he had never been acquainted with before. You know, there's certain things that are impossible with God. Did you know that? I say this a lot of times. A lot of times we get the idea there's nothing impossible with God, and that's true. There's nothing impossible with God as to the act of God. But see, there are things that are impossible with God as to lie. God cannot lie. The Bible says it is impossible for God to lie. Why is it that God cannot lie? He is the Spirit of truth. So then God wanted to know the other side of life. He wanted to know the other side of life. That's where the lie came in. When the suffering came in. All of these things came in together that God might know. But it's so beautiful to understand God and understand what God was doing and why God did it and how the thing came to pass. See, it's through the weakness of others that we are pulled into things. It's through the weakness of your children that you get involved with the law and the different things that you would never know anything about. Isn't that right? I'd hardly know anything about the law if it wasn't for getting involved with the law through others. See, that side of life I didn't mess with. I didn't fellowship. I didn't have nothing to do with that side of life. Even coming up, I never drank in my entire life. I never drank beer nor whiskey either. So I didn't know that side of life. See, God doesn't know anything except his own righteous confines. Or that is, he did not, except through the act of creation or through his son Jesus. By tabernacling in the body of the Lord Jesus, he came to know that was without God. And so then when you and I study about this great revelation, we see that how that God takes this great mystery. The Bible said, great is the mystery of God. And Paul said, I'm a steward of the mysteries. God is a mystery. The reason it's so great is because God is a mystery to human beings. God is the invisible. You can't find him. God does not exist so far as the human comprehension. God isn't there. There is no such thing as God. There never was any such thing as God as to a human definement or comprehension. That's why you have men of today that are supposed to be brilliant, and yet they are ignorant. If you understand what I'm saying? They deny God. They deny there is a God. They try to figure him out intellectually. They try to define him as a scientific definition. And they can't find God. They say it just ain't there. That's it. And they consider themselves to be brilliant. You know, brilliant. Because they don't accept the heresy of there being a God. But see, you know there's a God. I know there's a God. We can comprehend God. But we can only do it through God. That is, through the mind of Christ. If God comes down as a great mind in a human body as he did. And then come to me. Through the relation of that human body. Little by little, he educates me, as we would say. Little by little, I go through my process. Little by little, I come to a graduation. All of these things are types and shadows that God has made to reveal his mysterious way of life, or to reveal himself as the great mystery coming forth. As to a school, as to an elementary school, as to a college. God has put these things for types and shadows. God made this as the springtime, as the autumn, as the fall, as the winter. These kind of seasons. God did this as the types and shadows. Everything that you look at, doesn't matter what it is, the stars. The Bible said in the heavens declare his handiwork. You look at the trees. Everything that's in the act of creation. It reveals God as from his place of mysterious hiding. It brings God forth. It's like a scientist that will take and define the little enzymes of your body that understand the chemical world or the world of chemistry. See, scientists can do that. They have little mechanisms that they can get right down to the minute and magnify it into existence. You can't see it, but with their eyes of understanding, they come up with it. They put things together and they brought it into existence. Yet it's non-existence. It's not there. So far as the human being is concerned, it's not there. Take back many years ago. Had a person been out in the field plowing and here comes a science and he would start talking to him about that. You know what they would have done? They would have eased off from him and they'd have went down the road and they'd say, you know, it's happened to him. It's happened to him over there. It's happened to him. And they'd have eased on off. But see, that same person that was supposed to be eccentric, look at him today. If we look at it like that, through the illustration, look at it today. See, they proved their point. They proved that they proved there is something out there. Why did God do that? Why would God go to the great trouble of making such a world filled with problems and then make a minute, an invisible thing? To this extent, he could have made that world visible to his creation. But he didn't do that. He made the creation and then he made the world invisible. That world invisible to the world of creation. Why did he do that?
Why would he go to all of that problem? It is because God is a mystery. The things of God are a mystery. They're great. God has no way to present himself to tangible substance, except he does it through a revelated state of mind. He has to do it through a transitional change. That's why the Bible says that God, we behold as in the face of Jesus, the glory of God from glory to glory, from inspiration to inspiration, from understanding to understanding. I am moving into the world of God. Jimmy leaving this morning. I watched the revelation of what took place a while back when Jimmy went out to Colorado. You know, color has to do with the covenant. Colorado with color. Jimmy going out there, that had a great significance. Jimmy leaving to go out there this time, he went out there to a place called the Garden of God, or he's going to that place. In X amount of hours, he'll be at Colorado Springs if he continues on. There, what they call Pike's Peak, a place that Zebulun Pike discovered. It's called Pike's Peak. You know, they tested the cars there. If a car could go to the top of that mountain, that meant it was a top-notch car. A lot of revelation in this. I've been bringing out some of it up here as concerning these things this morning. See, the Garden of Gods, this organ comes from the Garden of Gods. There's something that's taking place right now in the Spirit, a great mystery. It's unfolding. Today is a great, phenomenal time concerning the spiritual things. As a matter of fact, in the natural, it is Palm Sunday, according to the Jews, where Jesus made his triumph entry as he went into Jerusalem. See, these things, if we were hungry, if we were thirsty, if we was following after the things of God, these things would be unveiled to us. These hidden mysteries would come out. God would save them to us. But we're very carnal. We can't see. See, we can't see. We're like little babies. We can't see. A little baby, he's looking all around. He sees everything and he don't see nothing. See, he sees everything with his little old eye nerves. As we say, those 22 conductive nerves from the outer of the brain, he sees it. He sees the image of the tree. He sees the image of all the things around him, and yet he don't see nothing. You remember the little illustration, I referred back to it so much, riding down the road with my children, and I told them, I said, you don't see with these eyes, this is not where you see. And our dispute was, you know, they said, we do, Dad, we see it. I said, no you don't. I said, let me prove to you that you cannot see with these eyes. And then as I asked the children different things as we rode along the road, I'd say, what is this? They said, that's a cow. I said, oh, you see that? Yeah, I see it with my eyes, Daddy. I said, no, that isn't it. So I go a little farther and I would say something. They say, I see it. I say, yeah. I see it with my eyes, Daddy. That proves you're wrong. I said, no. Then I went a little farther and I found some things that they did not understand. They did not know anything about. They did not know what it was. But they could see it in plain view. I said, now what is that? And they couldn't tell me. I said, why can't you tell me you see it? I said, you said that you see it with your eyes. If you see it with your eyes, why can you not tell me what it is? And then I explained to him, we do not see with our eyes. As the baby doesn't see with its eyes. If it would see with its eyes, then it would know what it was looking at. But see, we see with our understanding. If we've been tutored into something to know what it is, then we see it. That's why Paul used the terms that the eyes of your understanding be enlightened. That you might comprehend the heights and the depths and the width and the length of this thing. See, I brought out the other day in speaking here as to what the length was, what the height, the depth, all these things are as to what Paul spoke. See, this is the mystery of the whole thing. God, you cannot see God. There's no way that you can see God. Paul, on the way to Damascus, Paul just saw a light along the road. And that light blinded him. It was just the light of the angelic form of Christ, and he was blinded. The light that come through Moses' face, they could not look upon it. He had to veil it. See, you can't look on God. God is the great light under which no man can see, no man can understand, no man can approach unto. Christ is in that light. Through Christ, through the compassion of God's own doings, in feeling sufferings and infirmities, I am made nigh to that light. I come into that light. What is that light? It is an understanding.
Light represents understanding. I get into this room, the brighter the light is, the more I can see the image. The clearer I can see the image. The less light that's in a room, the less I can make out the image, especially if it's a little distant. So then, when I come into the understanding of God, the more I can make out the images. The more I can understand the images. You are in the shadows. You say, you see, you look at a tree, you say, now, there, Brother Pike, is a tree. I say, no. No, you're just looking at it in the distance. You can't make it out. That's a man. See, you just can't make it out. Jesus comes along and he said, if they do this in a green tree, what will they do in the dry tree? Referring to himself and the others as trees. Saying that the trees of God are full of sap. Why did he do that? He had a superior understanding. See, that which is invisible, you can't see. Unless God brings his light, his glory, his spirit, understanding gets greater and brighter. And you see the images. You see clear. You understand. You unveil. You see beyond the shadows. If everything is in the night and there's a moonlight, all you see is the veil. You can't really tell whether it's a tree off in the distance. You can't tell what it is. You just kind of see a shadow like of it. See, you and I in this world, as we go through the sufferings of Christ to rend the veil of this intellectual or to do away with our gullible design, the natural, we can't see beyond the veil. The Bible said we see as under the lesser light, them of lesser light. We see through a glass darkly, which is an intellectual veil. As it was with Rebekah, as to the veil that was over her face. And Isaac could not see the beauty of the woman until they entered into the secret chambers. And there the veil is rent, and there the veil is taken off of her face, and he sees her as face to face. So as with a man and his wife, he does not behold the beauty of his wife until the secret chambers, and then she's unveiled. And then she is his treasure. She belongs to him. She's part of him. See, this is why Satan has stooped to the lewdness that he has in this day, to unveil the woman. See, the veil is coming off of the church. It's being taken away. We've been under a veil. We've had an old intellectual veil over our face, which is death. Like they used to say, if a kid's born with a veil, that's the veil of death, you know. So then a veil, getting beyond the veil, seeing beyond the veil. How can I do that? How could I ever do that? I've got to come beyond Calvary. I've got to get beyond Calvary. As long as I'm on that side of Calvary where the law is, then I'm under the veil. Because I'm under the penalty of sin and death. I can't get beyond the veil. I can't get beyond Calvary. All of the people of today that are living today that are fallen from grace are still under the law. They're still within the veil. They haven't got past Calvary. They can't get past the veil. They can't see the glory. They haven't come into the house. They haven't come into the light. They can't behold it. How do you understand what I'm saying? You know why? Because they've not come to the sufferings of Christ. This is why Paul wanted to come to the sufferings. The sufferings is self-denial. The suffering is putting down the body. The suffering is coming out of the veil. Don't rend your garment. He said, rend your heart. See, the moving away of the veil as to the covenant that God gave. God gave Abraham a covenant. The covenant with circumcision as to the removing of the foreskin. As to the revealing of headship, which produces life, which is Jesus at Calvary. Jesus was unveiled. They took away his natural garments to unveil him, as to show. The veil of the temple was rent in twain as to the natural, while as to he in his being, the Bible said that the veil, he was made in the likeness of the sinful veil, even the form of humanity. And that veil which is between man and God, the Bible said, making a better way into the holies of holies. By rending the veil, that is to say, his own body taken out of the way. That bodily image of sin that he was made, to eradicate that, to do away with that, to plant that in the soul, to where from Calvary on, the sufferings would be over. And there, from Calvary on, that there would be no veil between the inner spiritual life and the inner spiritual man and God. There is no veil. God doesn't see you as you anymore. He sees you as bone of his bone and flesh of his flesh. He sees you as the finished product of God. He sees you in Christ. He sees you as the changed image. Jesus. Going down into the heart of the earth. And then Jesus. Coming back up. The Bible said he appeared in another form. We say this again. What kind of form? Have you to come up in another body to to the extent that you would plant Frank in the ground and Michael would come up. That couldn't be a true resurrection. He came up as the same Jesus that was put out. But he did leave behind the veil, sown in, as a spiritual, or natural raised as a spiritual. Terrestrial, he comes up as celestial. He came up in another form, but the form, I say again, was the new form of godliness and righteousness, because in his first form, he was made in the likeness of sin. So he left that sinful image behind. He buried that sinful image. He passed through the fire and then came up as the glorious image of God. So this is why Thessalonians changed the Bible. Said if we have this hope in us, we'll be changed to be like him. For we shall see him as he is and know him in his appearing as the great resurrected body. I know him as a natural man, born as a natural man the way he was. But then I will be unveiled and outshine the noonday sun. How could he do this? He did this because he made in himself twain, both Lord and Christ. He laid down the Lord part. He brought forth the Christ part, which was the living. He done away with the sinful part. He brought forth the great part, which was the new form that he come up in. See, this is what we've got to do. The veil has been rent. The veil has been taken away. See, we've got to rend our heart. The garment of the Old Testament has already been rent. And now the physical rending that came into view back during the dark age, it's gone. And now it's the spiritual rendering. That is to rend the heart, or the old covering of the veil of the spiritual hardness of the heart, of the powers of evil, the intellectual darkness, to come beyond that, to rend that veil, to come out of that. See, and then we start understanding. From Calvary, we start understanding. When we get our experience, we start understanding. The veil is still over the hearts of the people. They must rend that veil. Even in the reading of the Old Testament, it's untaken away. Paul said, even unto his day, which we can say even unto this day. People that bypassed Calvary, they didn't go through Calvary. They did not get the rent veil. Today, they are still in the natural. They're still out there in that world. See, you're over here in your homeland. You're in the Spirit. John and the Spirit on the Lord's day. That's the homeland. They're out there in Egypt. Garlic and onions. So then to come to the sufferings, this is the beauty of God. If I can come to the sufferings, if I can come to Calvary, if I can pass through the veil, then I've gone through the door of Christ, which is hanging between heaven and earth. Here hangs Jesus. I pass through that door and I go into heaven. See, that's what today has to do with the triumphal entry of the palm leaves that we can say much about, thrown down below. Before Jesus, and Jesus coming in on Palm Sunday. Sister Betty remembers when we were down, way down in South America, somewhere down in Chile. Down in Chile, we went to a Catholic church. We was walking by, and the Lord compelled me to go into this Catholic church. And they were having Palm Sunday. It was a Palm Sunday thing. Great revelation that took place at that time. We was discussing it this morning. I'm just trying to hurry through because there's so much to say that I won't get to say but very little of it. But anyway, if we just had our time, plenty of time, to just stop, take our time, settle down as it was with Paul and his people all night long, and let the Holy Spirit speak and take his time. It would be such a beautiful work of art. It would be such a beautiful thing as a puzzle put together, every tiny little piece. But see, great is the mystery of godliness. Great is the mystery, which means there are so many multiplied parts that it takes a lot of time, a lot of patience, a lot of listening. So then we get past Calvary. This was Job. This was suffering. This is why Job suffered. We come to Calvary. We've got to get to the place of suffering. We've got to pass through the Red Sea of the sufferings of Calvary. We've got to go through the wilderness of the biting of the serpents. That is getting past the evil spirits of thoughts that trouble us. Those evil thoughts through the wilderness of our intellectual reasoning as to the realm of change. From Egypt to Canaan, the danger place of the woman to the change of life. See, we're coming over the travail, going to leave off with bearing, but we've got to get through the wilderness and the serpents, those evil thoughts that keep hitting us. We can't stand them. We despise them. We don't want them. They're evil. They're impure. We want to get away from them, but they plague us. They plague us. They come to you. They talk to you. They say things. They make you feel dirty. So you have to get under the shower of God. You have to clean off. You have to stay clean in the sight of God. They rob you of your peace. They rob you of all the blessings. They rob you of all the good things that you could have. See, we're going through Calvary. We're coming from the land of Egypt. We're coming across the Red Sea, through the wilderness, and then we're going over into the land of Canaan, where the fruits are. That is to say, those luscious thoughts that we feed off of. For the Bible said God will feed the man the fruit of his thinking. We're going to get the fruit of our thinking as we go through this wilderness as to the fact that if we feed off of the wrong thing, then the fruits of that's going to be evil in our lives, and we're going to produce evil in our lives. But if we can get to that land of Canaan, if we can get the right thoughts, if we can differentiate, God will feed us the fruits of our thoughts. Our thoughts produce faith or unbelief. Our thoughts is what projects faith or unbelief. It's from thoughts that comes forth faith or unbelief. And whatever the believing or unbelief, whatever it might be, we feed from that. That is our fruits. We get the fruits. If we believe unto the right thing, we get good things. We get heavenly things. Nothing's impossible to us. If we are in unbelief, our thoughts bring us to unbelief, then we're in trouble, folks. So then, like the water that's boiling on the stove in the pot, it boils, and after a while, then comes forth the steam from it. So this is the way faith is. We must have the right thoughts. We must come to the realm of suffering. What is suffering? It is self-denial. That's with Job. It is self-denial. You must deny yourself. Though Job justified himself in every way, when he finally came face to face with God, he found one thing, and that is that Job was guilty. Job was guilty. See, these men that accused Job, their light was not as bright as Job's. Job had been to the realm of suffering. He was passing through that realm to be made perfect. These men were yet in Egypt, as we say. And they were reasoning as to what they thought about it. And so then they accused Job. But see, their light was not as bright as Job's. But when God came from the other side to take Job on over, see, Job had got in between. Job was at the rim of suffering. He was at the door. And he knew that he'd done all that he could. But see, he didn't make his confession as someone that had done all they could and then failed and he must depend on God. He didn't do that. He made his confession as he had to do this to show Christ because Christ was innocent. But he made his confession as that one that was not guilty. But see, Christ clearly tells us, and so does Paul in his teaching, that no flesh can be justified by the law. And Job was still under the law. There is no justification when you come to measure up to the law. For as Paul said, God give you the law and no man keeps the law. Yet Paul said, I'm blameless as touching the law, to again be a type of Christ. But through the revelation of Paul, as it was the understanding of Jesus, as it was with Job when God came forth, God's light being much brighter than the light of those accusers, those miserable comforters. When the light of God came, Job said, my God, I see it. See, that is, I could tell Frank all about my goodness, but Frank might be living a life three times better than me. So I could never touch him. He'd just brush it off and say, look at me. I'm all right. But now let God come forth. And then it puts it on the other foot, as we say. Here is a light so bright that my little candlelight can hardly be seen. Then I would, like Job, I'd say, oh my God. Oh my God. Or Frank would say, oh my God, I've sinned. I measured myself by Brother Pike when I should have measured myself by God. Job measured himself by his visible confidence that kept laying the measuring rod to him. But see, when God came, then Job realized his mistake. Now, when Job realized his wrong, then his sufferings became a treasure to him. Before he realized his wrong, he was a righteous man, saying, here I am, I've done everything. I've done everything. My God, why hast thou forsaken me when I've done everything? You know, type of Jesus. I've done everything, and now look what you give me. You break my teeth with gravel, he said, in the prophetical utterance. You pierce me through with barbed wires. You've torn me apart as a lion its prey. And on and on and on, you've broken my bones. You've melted me like a candle. You understand what I'm saying? In Job's defense, his defense as to his righteousness, it automatically annulled his sufferings to the extent that he could not reap the benefits of God through suffering. And this thing had come upon Job to make him a perfect man. See, God said, have you considered my servant Job that he is a perfect man? that he is upright. There's none in all the land like him. Like he did Moses. He said, and my man Moses is faithful in all of his house. Wasn't you afraid to speak against him? Someone would say, well, Brother Pike, if Job was already perfect, then why should God make him perfect? Now, see, we've got to remember that all of God's works is known unto him from the beginning. Are you perfect? No. In your bodily errors and stumblings, you're not perfect. And yet the Bible teaches that you are the perfect man. For God has perfected forever them that are sanctified. Then Job was a perfect man through the foreknowledge of God, and God seeing him at the end of the way. The confirmation of it is, Job said, though the skin worms devour my body, yet in my flesh shall I see him. For I shall stand in the latter day, he said. Not another, but I will stand myself in the latter day. See, God saw him in perfection. He said, Lucifer, have you considered him? So then God wanted to bring him to the enjoyment of that perfection and bring him to that place to where Satan could never touch him anymore, because he is a perfect man. Oh, he was a perfect man, and you are a perfect person. And God desires to bring you to that wonderful place. It's called his rest. But you cannot go there unless you suffer. For see, they that have suffered have ceased from sin. So then you've got to get past the veil. You've got to get past Calvary. Unless I can get past the veil of my intellectual comprehension, I will never perceive that invisible world. I'll never know about the mystery of that world. So then, when God brought Job to this, the miserable confidence came to crucify. The religious sect said, crucify him. He says he's the Messiah. Crucify him. And so thus he was crucified. One there that spoke as to the right thing, but had the right understanding, that shows us the Jewish people. Another that spoke as to the accusation, to show us the Roman powers of paganistic slaughter. Here Job is, and Job is passing over now. He's between heaven and earth. You say, how can he be between heaven and earth, Brother Pike? Because if you'll look at the vision, here is the vision between heaven and earth. Here is Lucifer coming up to the second heaven. And here is God coming down to the second heaven. And here is the communication. Lucifer cannot get into the third heaven. God cannot enter into the first heaven, except through the body of the Son. Which means the sufferings of Job is the only way that God can get to Job. He's up here in the third heaven. Satan comes to give the report. God said, where have you been? I've been to and fro in the earth, Lucifer says. Seeking whom he may devour, he could have said. Going to and fro in the earth. So he comes up here, has to give an account. All right, where is this? Like in the church right here. This is the halfway mark. See, here we are. We could use an illustration. Here you are in one level. Here I am in another level. Here the people are in another level. Not the man speaking as the minister, but God. You're caught in between. He's telling you. This is Calvary. This is the crucifixion. How could this be, Brother Pike, as in a courtroom of judging 12 men on the jury, as to the apostles, as to Jesus, as to the prosecutor Satan, as to that that is your attorney, as to Jesus, as to the judge God? See, here we are in this realm. What is the sufferings? The self-denial. The self-denial. The world out there is putting the nails in your hand. You know that. You can't excel. You can't have anything except you go through God and he give it to you. Sanctified, purified, you're cut off from Egypt. So they're putting the nails in your hand. They're crucifying you. Doing it to you, they do it to Jesus. Bone of his bone and flesh of his flesh. So here we are. The preacher keeps saying, deny self. Turn away from self. Leave off with your TV programs. Leave off with your ball games. Leave off with your frolics. Leave off with your lust. Leave off with the lust of the eyes. All of these kind of things. Job said, if mine eyes have lusted, then let the judges take me. See, the Calvary, the suffering, the halfway mark. Who comes to this place? Everybody comes to it. Everybody comes to it. Why, the ball games, the players, they come to the church. The people that are in the world come to the church. The millionaires, the billionaires, they go to mass. They go to the church. All of them comes to the church. As to Calvary, the people came. Then was the axe laid under the root of the tree. And John cut down the tree of evil. Because here is the differentiating. Here is the dividing. Here is the first man, Adam, and back to the tree of knowledge and the whole generation that God's rejected. And here on this side is the tree of life as to the mind of Christ. Even the new form, Christ, which is coming up in the resurrection as to the mind of Christ, coming up on the other side is to be the beginning of the creation of God. As to where God starts. The other was not God. As it was said, was Eve the mother of the living? Of course. But when we think of it, we think of Adam. Adam was not in the transgression,
somebody says.
That's right. So then Adam would be that of all the living. No.
It says Eve is that of all the living.
What does it say then of Adam?
That in Adam all die.
So then how could that be? Here Eve done the sin and Adam's paying for it. That's the way it is. How do you understand what I'm saying? See, can you blame the woman when the woman is nothing but a body that the man lives in and reproduces through
of his own image? You can't do that. That's why the Bible said a woman will be saved in childbearing if she'll continue in holiness and sobriety. See, she represents Calvary. That alone that God has placed upon her makes God favor the woman. And he said, Brother Pike, what are you talking about? I'm saying that my body, can my body help what my inner man does?
Someone was so sure it could.
The outer man ought not let the inner man do it. Now, can he help it?
Isn't the man stronger than the woman? Can she stop him if he wants to knock the window lights out?
No.
See, my body is the woman. My body has nothing to do with it. The body profiteth nothing. The dispute was over the body. What is a man's dispute over in this world?
I'll kill you, you mess with my wife.
See, the body, you don't mess with the body. So the dispute is over the body. That body belongs to me. You keep your hands off of it. Even God said, I'm a jealous God. He said, a man that's jealous of his wife, you can give him money. He said, that won't suffice him. He'll take the money and still split your throat when he gets a chance. Because you took his wife. You messed with his body. Have you understand what I'm saying? See, the body of the Lord Jesus, or the body of the church, or the body of the woman, or my body. The body without the spirit is dead. Go look in the casket. Look at the body. What is the body doing? Look at the grave. What is the body doing? What's happened? The one on the inside that maneuvered, that power of ingenuity is gone. That's the thing that we're looking at. Now, I know every now and then you slip off of the bank and have to reach and get your hand because you lose me. You know I lose you. You're gone. Oh, my God, what was he saying? You know, but don't worry about that. That's all right. Don't worry about that. Somebody said, I'm slipping. I'm slipping. He's slipping. No, ain't nobody slipping. It's just a slippy bank. Stay off of it. And you won't slip in the water. Let mama have your hand. Let daddy have your hand. I've been along a slippy bank many a time, but daddy's strong hand kept me from slipping in. We got to watch now. If I plunge into the water to get to the other side, I got to know how to swim. If I don't, I won't get to the other side. I'll get caught in the current. I'll get caught in the sunk hole. I got to know how to swim. Being a little boy from the country, I'm well acquainted with rivers because I've been in rivers many times. Grabbling and swimming and on slippery rocks and all kinds of things. A lot of times I got busted, you know. I'd fall down, slip down, sometimes almost drown. Numbers of times. But see, we're at the point of the crossing like today. Today is Palm Sunday. See, we're at the point of the crossing. This is a great moment. This is a great time. This is a changing place. When you come to Calvary, then comes the sufferings. Let me say something here to clarify this. Maybe this will help us a little bit. You know, God does strange things. We have to run like a racehorse to get over a few words because of the infirmities of the flesh. The weakness, you lose the baby, quits nursing after a while, and everything's gone. So I have to run like a racehorse. That's what causes get tangled up sometimes. I don't like to do that because it goes out over the radio and people that are listening, they have plenty of time. They just sit in their homes and listen. But I asked the Lord one time, I said, you know, I said, there's a lot of things I don't understand, God, and I really don't unless he tells me. I said, but my heart longs to understand, and I want to know. If you'll tell me, I'll listen, because I want to know. You know, there is no death in the world of understanding. There is no death to that. You understand that? Did you know that even all that Lucifer knows, all of those things, in that world of understanding, you know ahead of your reflection coming from God to that point? Not the evil. We'll explain that maybe sometimes. I wanted to explain a little of it today, but I don't guess I'll get to. But anyway, I asked the Lord this question. I said, Lord, now I know it's a rent veil. You said everyone that openeth the matric is holy unto God, the firstborn. And I said, I wish you'd explain some things to me. And one of the things I said, now I don't understand the birth of a child. I said, for instance, the cranium part, the head. I don't understand this. And the Lord began to speak to me. And I brought this out. We've got this on tape. We think of birth as a travail. That's the way we think of it. Because we're taught that. But see, we misunderstand. It is true that birth, I say, is a travail. as to the opening of the matrix, when Mother All Earth opened up and the Lord Jesus came forth. What was it when Jesus came forth? It was the head of the body. It was the church head. It was the head because the travail is within that as to the opening of the matrix. But after that, there is no travail. After that, it is up to the physician to bring forth the child. So then, I said that to say this, down through the church ages, it is the travail of the physician to the extent Paul said, I travail till Christ be formed within you. So then it is their job to bring the child. As from the opening of the matrix, that is to say Calvary, the rent veil, the coming forth of the Son of God. For as to Mother Earth, when she opened up, Christ went into the heavens. The headship is in the world. The rest of the body has not yet been exposed. We are the church. We're the membership. We've not yet entered into that part as to heaven with our body. But our inner man has, which is Christ, our head. Even he is in heaven, our mind. So then Jesus says to the body, the physical body, and then as to the blood bath of the Jews, which we had time to get into this morning. But as to the blood bath of the Jews, then let his blood be upon us. As to the blood-dipped vesture of the membership of the Jewish body that was to go through the dark age, the blood bath as to the child. The water at Pentecost is to baptism. And the spilling of the blood and then the end time over here where we're at, the revelation, as to the Spirit. See? Brand spanking new, somebody says. And he hollers out, here we are. What is it? The last of it is the 10 toes, as to the little stone hewed out of the mountain, as to rolling down to the Babylon, as to tearing down the kingdoms. Remember, there was a head of gold. That's faith. See, I have to say this in a condensed way because I don't have time to go into the particulars and detail it. The word could be like a beautiful portrait or picture to your mind. I can't take this out of heaven. I can't do that. Remember the vision where I was going to take the portrait out of heaven, just give it to the people? And a voice said, if you do, you are a violator of the law. I can't do that. So then I have to try to bring you in here and get you to look at it. I got to get you over the point of suffering. I got to get you into that realm. Like we preached a sermon here one time, I know some of you remember the checkpoint. Let me say it like this. You can get a pass. You can go down into Mexico. You can be in the areas of Mexico. Just go across the border. So you got a little pass, a little tourist pass. While you can buy things, you can see Mexico. You can see all of Mexico. The Bible said, having been made partakers of the Holy Ghost, tasting of the power of God and the power of the world to come. You've got over into Mexico. See, but folks, you just try to get into the interior. You know, outer court, inner courts, holies of holies. You try to get to the interior. You try to get past the checkpoint. Then you're going to have a visa. You're going to have something altogether different if you get into those countries. Other than just the little surrounding area, like Russia. You can cross over from a certain country over there, get in the edge of Russia. Looks real good, but you wait till you get on the inside of Russia. They won't let you in there. See, that's where they communicate as to world problems and world activities. And they don't want you to know they're having their secret meeting. How do you understand what I'm saying? God is wanting us to get past the checkpoint. He's trying to take us past Calvary. He's trying to check our credentials and see if we've got more than just a religious experience where everybody comes into the light as to the grace of God being in the church. And he wants to see if we can get over the Jordan. He wants to get us past the checkpoint. He wants to get us into the interior. God is trying to get us way down in there where those things are made. And folks, that's so much different. The way the people live, your dollar value is 10 times 10 when you get in there. On the outskirts, they just eat it up and use it up. If I had time to explain what I mean spiritually, may the Lord open your understanding to it. So then, getting past the checkpoint, see the headship. Like I asked the Lord this question, this pertaining as to the natural. But I said, what about the head? I said, a child's head looks so oblong. You know, it looks like an egg. I said, why is that when a child is born? And the Lord said, because of the suppression. He said, I made the head, the cranium, the skull. I left this part of the skull out, the Lord said. So that the suppression, as passing through the matrix, As to the rent veil, back to Jesus, thinking spiritually now. The suppression of the head, it makes it oblong so that the woman is not in such anguish. So then in this, and then when, of course, that is the trail of travail is over, because from that point the physician brings forth the child. But in that, the head begins to rearrange and it comes back to its normal position. Though we'll say about the little baby, don't touch him up here. No, don't touch him up here. Because his little skull's got to grow out. See, this has a great significance, if we had time to go into it, as to the beauty of God, the creation of God, the act of God. So then we are trying to get past the checkpoint. They came to Jesus and they said to Jesus, said, what must we do to work the works of God? He said, look, the travail is over. See, with me, I'm the head. I suffered. I went through the travail. That's all. That's over. See, that's over. That's over. You don't have to worry. The relaxation is here now. The woman's going off into her sleep, into her dreamy state, passing through the dark ages. And to say, that which is America that will come out on the other side over there, and that is to the child which will rule the entire world, as from, we say, the White House, which has the preeminence, the United Nations. So then we look at that, see, and we see that. So we know that we're passing through. We're getting past the checkpoint. We're getting past the dark age. We're getting past the suffering. So how do we do it? We accept the sufferings by saying, I will suffer with the Lord. I seek to know Him in the fellowship of His suffering. So then I submit to the sufferings and I throw away all of that which I have for myself and count it as nothing but dung. And I come to this place. And then when I get to that place, the Lord whispers to me. He says, you don't really have to suffer. That self-denial was to bring you to where I could cuddle you. He said, the headship, the suffering is already over. That's already over. To work my works, all you have to do is enter into my rest. Enter into my rest. Just believe on what I've already done. Calvary's already took care of it. Just enter into my rest now. And just rest with me. Everything's all right. It's left up to the preachers. It's left up to the physician. See, the preacher, what he's going to do, he's going to tell you. He's going to tell you of the sins. But now, to the world, that'll be horrible. They'll back off. That means travail. They won't go through with it. Charismatic way of life. There's no seed of reproduction. There's no life. There's a sterileness. See, all they're after is the glamour and the frolic. All they're after is the lust. All they're after is the passions and the thrills and all those kind of things. See, and they'll back off. But you, where it seems that you're going through the fire, going through Calvary, going through this great thing, he said, don't worry now. It's up to the physicians. All they're going to do is perfect your faith. They're going to tell you what I've already done for you. They're going to tell you who you are. They're going to tell you what you are. They're going to tell you, though you at this point, steal the bodily members. Steal the bodily members, but you don't have to worry. See, the head is in heaven. Everything is all right. Intelligence, the headquarters. Nothing but the little membership of the body. David said, I'm wonderfully made. The other writer said, before I was formed in my mother's womb. As to the membership, all of my members was put together. So then the members of the body of Christ from the wound of the world has already been put together by the foreknowledge of God. So you don't have to worry. Everything's all right. You're predestinated. You're justified. You're sanctified. You're glorified. Now it does not yet appear because, see, the child is still on the inside. The woman, the body, is still carrying the child. That's speaking of individual membership. As to one dimension, as to a physical, then there's a spiritual, there's a natural. So then I say, but collectively speaking, as to the church itself as the many members. See, then we go back to the church ages, as to the seven church messengers, as to the message. See, but the preacher, he's just going to perfect your faith. That's all. Gradually you're going to be born. Gradually you're going to come forth. Gradually. Until not a little finger, not a little toe, not a little member of that darling body will be injured coming forth. A lot of times the child is born as it was with, Brother Correll's little child, such a beautiful little thing, and it crushed its head as it came. Satan, the killer. See, the killer. Water, blood, and spirit. Baptism by water. Baptism by fire is the blood. Baptism in that it consumes our sin. As to the blood, it hides it. Baptism by spirit. See, life, brand spanking new. So then, all of a sudden, the end of the church ages. And then what happens? See, there's another child being born at that time. The little toes are exposed. But as to this little one being caught up to the throne, all of a sudden the little bastard image comes forth. It is finally finished. The little bastard image stands up as the Antichrist. Then the little one that was caught up to the throne, all of a sudden that little one that was caught up, including the membership of the body, the rapture, the translation, over the tribulation period, all of a sudden that little one rises up with the rod of iron. And as a stone hewed out of the mountain, he comes rolling down through the world, all the confusion, moving through the world. That is through Babylon, the revelation of Jesus Christ. And then it strikes in the 10 toes. It strikes the image. It strikes the image. It's the 10 toes because the image reaches all the way from the expulsion of the garden over here to the end of the world. And this is the last part. The tail that wraps around the stars, it casts the stars down. Why not the head? Because the head is smitten over here in the garden as to Adam, and Adam all died. That evil mind is smitten of God, rejected. And as the old saying, when I was a little boy, they used to say the last thing that dies of a snake is its tail. And over here at the end, the tail's dying. As it goes to die, it casts the third part down. That is to say the end of the thing. How do you understand what I say? The end of a thing. How do you understand what I'm saying? See, from the garden to the end of the thing. From over here, the head, over here to the toes, the end of the thing. So then, when we see this, the child goes up. See, to rule with the rod of iron, the days of Solomon, his brother born of another woman, not Bathsheba. David had promised the kingdom to the son of Bathsheba. But this son of another woman rises up. He tries to take the kingdom. It's conspiracy. Solomon let him off for a period of time. Are you listening to what I say now? But when that same son got Bathsheba, the mother of Solomon, to come to plead his cause to get the Shunammite, the most beautiful girl in all the land, as it was said, that Solomon took to wife, when this man wanted her, Solomon got into rage and killed him. He said, "Why didn't you just ask for my throne?" You know, and he killed the man. You understand what I'm saying? God has let Satan go for a long time. He's let him do all kinds of things through his act of conspiracy. That is to say, your brother, that one that is your brother out there in the flesh of another woman, even of the world. No, the same as to Abraham, the father. All comes from God. But see, that son of another woman, conspiracy. They've tried to take the kingdom over through an intellectual thing, like in the days of the Jews when they took the Ark of the Covenant. But see, when they rise up, their pattern, their paint, their movie star look, they're jogging, their building of their muscles is pressing the iron, and all of the things they do. As we say, the mirror, mirror on the wall, who's the fairest of them all? When they rise up to show themselves as that great, beautiful one to take that body, then the dispute is over the body of the Shunammite. And that's when Solomon killed that brother. That's when you're going to kill that brother. See, because the one thing that you're laboring for, the one thing that you're waiting for, the one thing that you're looking for, Solomon said, why not ask for the kingdom? See, that's the most beautiful thing there is the glorified body. That's that beautiful woman that your inner man is married. Nobody's going to get hurt. How do you understand what I'm saying? David could not have this woman. He was old. He was dying. The heat had left his body. Though they brought her to him for wife, he could not have her. See, because on that side of Calvary, with the law, to them that are out yonder, they can't have that beautiful body because they're dying. They've got the sentence of death in them. But see, we're passing over. We're going into the checkpoint. Now, they've come in with us, but their papers are not right. Their credentials are not right. As an epistle known and read of all men, they don't read right down here. See, so they cannot have this. We're on the other side of Calvary. We're in heaven. We're in that great spiritual dimension, that great world. How beautiful are the feet of them that bring glad tidings. So then on that side of Calvary, folks, we've got to understand that the sufferings is over with Jesus. The Jews went through that so the Gentiles would not have to go through that. We are a spiritual thing. We are caught up into heaven. We are they that dwell in heaven. We are they that have received this glorious thing. How beautiful. As to the twins, the Jesus and the Christ. How beautiful as to the struggling of the twins in the womb in the world. As to the Jesus and the Christ. And the Christ finally won out. For it is said that the elder shall serve the younger. Even though Jesus born first, the Christ is born after Calvary, when Mother Earth gives up the new form, the new image. And who is under subjection? The body to the spirit. For we have known the Lord after the flesh, but we don't know him anymore after the flesh. From henceforth we know him as the Christ, as the Jacob, not the other, as to the Esau image of sin, as to the rejected, God gave that. But see, here we are. Who are we? We're not of the world. We're of God. We're not with the world. We only have problems as the Jews when we get out of our homeland. If I get out of the Spirit, the Bible said walk in the Spirit. Don't walk in the flesh, because you can't please God. That's the bastard image from the first birth. But he tells you and I to walk in the Spirit. Stay in the homeland. Somebody said, I feel horrible. I feel horrible. Brother Pike, I just feel horrible. May I tell you, I just soon to die. What you need to do is get back into the homeland. You done got over there in the pig pen somewhere. You know, you need to get back in the homeland. In the homeland, there is no suffering. In the homeland, there is no shame. In the homeland, there is none of that awful feeling. Not in the homeland. You're dwelling in the realms of intellect when you should be in the realms of faith and confiding in his word. You need to get back into the homeland. John was in the homeland. He was in the spirit on the Lord's day. And he saw all these beautiful things. So then, what am I saying? I'm not saying anything. God is saying it. See, how could I say anything? I don't know anything. It's my husband that knows. He's the head of the house. He's the one that tells me. He's the one that said it. I'm only repeating what he said. Or I'm giving away that it might be him speaking and not me, because I'm only his body. I'm his membership. It is his life. It is his spirit. It is he from within me speaking. And it is he that's reproducing his image from my body. Paul said, I travail. I travail that you might be born. I travail that the children might come forth. I travail that the little ones might run, jump, and play. How many understand what I'm saying? So then, to the point of suffering, the self-denial, the travail. When Zion travailed, she brought forth her sons and daughters. If there's no travail, then there is no children. There must be travail. There must be suffering. There must be self-denial. All these revivals that you see of hollering and jumping and prosperity and all these other things are not revivals at all. You say, well, what in the name of reasoning is it, Brother Pike? It is the children dancing around the golden calf. Somebody took a $30,000 offering. They got a bigger tent. They got nicer tractors. They're on more TVs. You know, look at the pain and the powder. Oh, somebody said, no, Brother Pike. Now, I don't get on that. Little old elementaries, you know. Look at the powder and the paint. Look at the Jezebels on television. I'm talking about on religious broadcasts. What is that? Did you know when the woman kinks her hair, you know, the little old elementary things, foolish and abased things of the world to confound the wise, and she kinks her hair and she pops in the Barbie pins. Did you know that had to do with the crucifixion of Jesus as to the thorns that went into his head? Did you know that when she paints her eyes, it has to do with the lizard, it has to do with the serpent, it has to do with sin showing up inside of her, the serpent taking over her body? Did you know that you can trace that back to Hollywood and the way that got started? I remember it very well as a boy. The way it got started, women went to nightclubs so much that they got black around the eyes, they had such a nightlife. And finally the whole world said the movie stars do it. So they started darkening their eyes. Did you know that's right? Did you know that that has to do with Lucifer? Did you know it has to do with the eyes of understanding and the eyes of your understanding being darkened because of your night life, being a creature of the night? Did you know that when you paint your lips, somebody said, a little lipstick, you know, like a man here in Atlanta. Oh, Church of God, great outstanding man, Mount Paran, made the statement. You know, a little paint didn't hurt any old barn, you know. But I'm glad that we don't have old barns around here. You know, the old barns is out yonder. They paint them out there. As a matter of fact, when they lay them down to rest, the undertaker, he does a real good job. He swabs them real good. The old barns ready to pass away. But we don't have old barns here. We have children of God. The Bible said God beautifies the meek with salvation. We have the temple of God here, not old barns.
And he put the paint on the old barns. Of course, that man reaped a bad price for that.
But did you know that when you put the lipstick on, do you know what that is? That's the great whore, drunk off of the blood of the martyrs. Her lips are red with the blood, or the wine of their blood. That's why that God lets them wear it out there. That's what it's all about. This is what I don't understand. We are supposed to be children of God. We're supposed to be people of God. We're supposed to be people of understanding. Why then do we do those things? Why? And I could go on and go on with these little old things like you wouldn't pay any attention to. Why do they paint the toenails and why do they paint the fingernails? Because it has to do with the nails that was driven in his hands and feet. That's why the blood that came forth. See, and on and on we could go. But I'm just saying this. We are speaking of the travail. Why do they take a woman and they rip her open? Why do they do that? Why is it said all down through the history of mankind that women carrying children were just ripped open in their bodies? Why did they do that? They'd go into a city, kill everybody, and because the child was there, they would rip the woman, just cut her to pieces, the rent veil. Why do they have Caesareans? The rent veil. See, why is that? To keep the child from death. It has a great significance. It has the great meaning. Even as to was when there was the stitching to form the cross. As to that which has to do with the return of the church. As to that after the purification. A lot of things that could be said. But have you understand what I'm saying as to these things? We are at the point of the suffering. We are at Palm Sunday today. We are at the crossing, at the triumphal entry. God took Job through the suffering. And when Job recognized that that was what it was all about, he said, I've sinned. And so then his sufferings became profitable to him. And his sins were laid aside through the suffering. And he came out the perfect man. And the Bible said that his children were more beautiful than ever. His children was the finest in all the land. He was richer than he ever was. He had far more riches than he'd ever had before. Heavenly treasure in earthen vessels now, but a double portion when this body is changed into his glorious image. When you get past the travail, when you get past the checkpoint, when you get past the suffering, you might have seen a few goodies here, and even goodies that you could not afford because the price was so high. But wait till you get to the end of the interior, and the same boots that have cost you $5,000 here, get them for $50 over there. And your money goes so much further, and your treasures are so much greater and so much more plentiful because you live in the land of treasure. All right, I just said that to say this, that we've come to that point, the church has come to that point, and many other things I'd like to say, but I can tell it's cooling off in here both naturally and spiritually. We're prone to move toward our body, and when our body is uncomfortable, some of us are so given to the flesh that, you know, there's no Calvary, there's no travail to get into the things of God. We just won't go to Calvary. Just won't do it. Then there we get cut off and we're left on the other side, as we would say, unless we're willing to do otherwise. But coming to a close, we see then that the church now is at the travail point. Okay, what will happen, Brother Pike? What will happen? Of course, there's a lot of present day revelation I would like to brought out. Sought to bring out a little bit, but I saw the Lord wasn't going to let me do it. I like to bring out the present day revelation. When I say this, all that we're speaking of is present-day revelation. It ain't never been brought out. But I'm talking about present-day revelation to what has to do with Bethlehem and the immediate one. See, where are we right now? What's about to happen right now? The whole world is fixing to go into travail. Now, why is that? Because the image of the bastard child is ready to be brought forth. See, and the great tribulation period is here, which means the Antichrist. The child must be brought forth. But just before that, remember now, just before that, what does God do? He sends his reapers. Just before the Antichrist, what comes? It's called the rapture, the catching up. In the book of John, the great multitude, it's called the catching up, which means the child that goes up to the throne is born just before Antichrist comes in. He goes up. He goes up to the throne. Now, his manifestation is the world seeing him. They don't really see him until Revelation 19. But just as quick as Antichrist comes to power. Christ, just at this time, reveals himself to the Jews, the head, the man-child. Why does he do that? It is through Jesus. Because now we're at the point that the Jewish members of that which is to rule the world to show the man-child in the physical realms is ready to come forth. So the Jesus must come back and pick up those members with the man-child. And a nation is born in one day. See, because when the head went out at Calvary, so did the members. The blood bath, and then comes the child. And the 144,000 caught up to Mount Zion shows the membership that formed themselves to that head, which is Jesus on Mount Zion. But you and I, what is it? It is before them. It is the Christ that is collecting its membership through the mind of divinity, through the mind of the revelation of the Son of God. And everyone that can get past that veil, that can get past the matrix, not as to a steel birth, but everyone that can get over that into this place, get his head over there, get his head straightened out, as they say, get the eyes of his understanding open. When the little child's eyes come open, anointed with eyesight, when his little eyes come open, then he sees. He's over there. Doesn't have to worry about the other members of the body. Does not yet appear, but the change is coming, which he shall be like. All the world shall see you. Christ will be in his temple. The world will come and kneel before you. He'll suddenly return in his saints to be glorified in his body. So then the glorification is coming. But you that can get over there, what is it? It's the Christ. Because once you get the headship in here, once you get the Christ in here, once you get the mind of God in here, the rest of the body belongs to him. But this body cannot be changed until the Jews come in. If my spirit came in when my body went out, how many understand what I'm saying? When the Jews that represent my body went out, then my spirit came in. That is, Christ the head went up as the Jews went out of his presence. The body dead because of sin. Keeping them in unbelief, keeping them in ignorance, so that he could preserve them. If I, in my body, relate to the Jews, then my body can't be changed until he appears in Thessalonians change. When he comes back with the nail prints as to the Jews, then my body will be changed. Because my body relates to that which is dead, and the Jews is dead, as to show my body dead, that my spirit, which was Christ, went into the heavenlies. And today my inner man, I'm not in the flesh. I'm not walking in the flesh. I am in heaven. And my inner man is in heaven while my body is yet in the realms of the earth. So that if my head is in there, if my spirit is changed, if I have salvation, I don't have to worry about my body. See, it can't sin because the body can do nothing. The body profiteth nothing. My inner man is already perfect, glorified, justified, sanctified. So I'm already perfect in his sight. My body could never make a mistake as to being charged against me. It's just called trespasses because it hath no will. But where these things are, there is no conscience of sin. There is no will of sin. And to sin, there has to be a will. So then everything is fine. Why worry? Just ease off into that rest, the relaxation. Leave it to the preachers. See, just believe, Jesus said. This is the rest. Believe. If thou canst believe, believe. But be sure you hear. Be sure your eyes are open. Let it be a still birth. And you'll be as blind. See, be sure that you're listening to the revelation, that you're interested in the revelation, and not in money, not in businesses, not in the things of this world. Be sure you're interested in Christ and to give yourself completely to this thing. And of course, many of you are not like that. Many of you are not going to do that. So many of you are never going to see revelation. Pray that God will grant unto you the spirit of life as to the birth, which he called the spirit of revelation. Let me say this and we're going to close because we didn't nearly get into what I want to get into. Why then did God make the invisible world? Because there is an invisible people. And that invisible world is now coming to view. Discovering a new star. Scientists said it never was out there before. It's come into view. This one is coming into view. Now what? If this world comes into view, what's happening to the other world? It's going out. It's receding. That world goes out. This one comes in. The revival. When that world comes in, the other world goes out. Now, if that is true, then when that world comes in, the people of that world, the government of that world, the understanding of that world comes into view. Because there is a people for that world. When the Jews came to Calvary, they had been the great nation, they had been the great government, but they went out of view. Isn't that right? But what came into view? The Gentiles. Another world came into view. See, but now that this world is going out, the physical world, the natural water world's gone, now the blood world's going out. Of physical birth, of dealing with the blood, of the genetics, of the doctors, of all this world of science. Now what's coming in? It's the third baptism. It is the Spirit. It is the spiritual world coming in now. The spiritual world coming in, the spiritual people coming in, the spiritual understanding coming in, the spiritual knowledge coming in. Those people are the great people that's going to inhabit eternity and the world of eternity. So then America, one world. The millennium, another world. The celestial, another world. Let's stand together. I hope you understand what I'm saying. The Bible said the wicked shall not understand, so I know that the eyes of your understanding are not enlightened if you are counted for as the wicked. But if you are the predestinated, if you are God, the Bible said, and the children of light shall see, they shall know when it's nigh, even at the door. And folks, it's close. I said the door is the closest that it can be. All I got to do is turn a knob, and that's it. I stand at the door, the heart's door knob. Rend not your garment, but your heart. So what is this? This is the great change. Where have we been? In the wilderness. Traveling through the wilderness. Who's been our leader? Moses. What do you mean, Moses? The word. See, the word is Moses, the law of the letter that killeth. That is, it brings to our mind the knowledge of sin. And we're faulty. But see, God won't count our trespasses against us. Because we have no conscience of sin. Won't count this against us. Where are we at now? Joshua. Joshua, who is Joshua? The revelation of the letter. The spirit of the letter. On the other side of Calvary. Jesus says to Moses, the prophet like unto Joshua as to the Christ. That within our heart, that which is the spirit, he's with us. I send my angel before you. Don't grieve him. He'll not pardon your transgressions. For my name is in him. So, here we are. What do we do? Over the Jordan, the old intellectual concept of religion, the intellectual rule. America is at an end. The world is at an end. Legalize lesbians. Legalize sodomites. I just read the article where over in one of the states this week they're going to sign the legalization of that of lesbians. 1,000 of them chaired. 6 times brought before the council, rejected, wouldn't quit. Brought it back, accepted it, adopted it. I said when this happens that God would burn the world. Coming back from Israel the third time. Coming to the great state. There it was on the papers. Votes overwhelming. Legalized, or they're going to legalize it. See, which means our government is filth and corrupt. God burns Sodom and Gomorrah because of that. As long as it wasn't legalized, that was different. Couldn't say it was the people, but now if the people let it go, then that means all flesh is corrupted as well. Because what you bid God speak, what you allow for, that's what you're guilty of. So that means that God can't work with any of them. He'll have to get rid of all of them. Won't be nothing left but the church. And he isn't going to let the church be here to be crushed in that. He took Lot out. And the day that Lot went out, God the same day burned Sodom and Gomorrah. Rain, fire, and brimstone down. That's why Jerry and I went down to that site of Sodom and Gomorrah while we was over yonder. Couldn't film it. Tried our best to film it. And I saw what the Lord was doing. I told Jerry, put up the films. And you say, what do you mean, Brother Pike? God didn't want Sodom and Gomorrah brought back to Bethlehem. All the beautiful part. The other he rejected. So, that's where we're at. I just got a prophecy that come in from somebody. Somebody somewhere in another state received a prophecy and it was the destruction of America. And they said they're really going to push that tract they printed. See, why? Right here at this particular time, everything's fitting together. Everything just coming into view perfectly. So what do we do? Nothing. Just believe. Believe. Believe in his works. Enter into his rest. Do all we can to conform to his way of life, not as to justification, as to works, But as to praise and honor and submission, thankfulness to him because of his works. A lot we could say about that as to justification, to explain it. Great is the mystery. But anyway, we understand enough to know that something is taking place. You know that, and I know that. Something is taking place. Joseph's marriage yesterday, I want to comment some on it. Maybe I'll get to tonight. Maybe not. But anyway, it had great significance. Great significance. Even the girl's name, great significance. The things that took place. Let's sing a little chorus together. Brother Jimmy going off today had great significance. Let's sing the song, I Love Him. If we love him, then say, Father, we'll keep your commandments. Brother Jerry opening the door for that little one to walk in at that time. That is unbelievable. Especially what he has to do with. And what Jerry has to do with. That is unreal, folks. This place is living and alive like 440 votes is attached to it. Every day, every minute. They that walk in heaven see heavenly things. Amazing grace. Do you know how amazing it is? How sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now I'm found. I was blind, but now I see. Sing it with me now. It was grace that taught my heart to fear. It was grace I feel relief. How precious did that grace appear. The hour that I first believed. And when the battle is over, I shall wear a crown. We shall wear a crown. We shall wear a crown. And when the battle is over, we shall wear a crown in the new Jerusalem. We'll wear a crown, wear a crown. We'll wear that bright and shiny crown. For when the battle is over, we shall wear a crown in that new Jerusalem. We'll wear a crown. We'll wear a crown. We'll wear that bright and shining crown. For when the battle is over, we shall wear a crown in that new Jerusalem. Can you sing more time? We'll wear a crown. We'll wear a crown. We'll wear that bright and shining. For when the battle is over, we shall wear a crown in that new Jerusalem. We'll wear a crown. We'll wear the crown. We'll wear the bright and shining crown. Oh, when the battle is over, we shall wear the crown in that new Jerusalem. Somebody say hallelujah. You know, the body of redemption is here. You say, how do you know Because when the revelation comes, that's by the redemption. See, when the spiritual is made known to the natural, that means the natural is being redeemed. Because as long as the natural does not know the spiritual, it means there's a separation, there's a barrier. But when the natural mind, that's why I say your eyes must be open. When it begins to comprehend, that means that's body redemption. The glory to glory is moving in then. The change is there. The ultimatum is coming. That's the coming of the Lord Jesus Christ into his body, revealing to his wife her inheritance and that she is his. Rejoice, ye barren, more the children of the barren woman than that of the married wife. The world is the married wife, a lot of children. But the barren woman has been that has been forsaken, the Bible said, as a woman in her youth, as a young woman in her marriage. And she's left without child, she's barren. Leah hath many children, Rachel had none. But then when the birth came, then came Joseph, then came Benjamin. And then those as the handmaid, but that of Joseph, his bow run over the wall. That of his multiplication, if you'll check history and check biblical history, biblical terms, you'll find out that it was of Joseph that the multitude was the greater. The multitude as of Joseph was the greater. The number was greater than that of the others. So then more are the children of that wife whose husband seemed to have forsaken her, even the Lord Jesus had left her. Christ is bride. More are children. For her, the increase of his ministry, the increase of his kingdom is without end. And there shall be no end to the increase of his kingdom. Which means he not only can populate earth, but he speaks of worlds in the plural. He can populate, there is in our galaxy, millions and billions of worlds. There is no end to his increase. But righteousness must begin in the earth. Salvation must begin in the earth. And in this to the end, the explosion of the population as into the angelic world, as to the stars, as to the heavenlies, as to the celestial, as to that without boundaries, as to eternity. Let's bow our heads together while you've got your heads bowed, thinking on Jesus. Remember how great he is. We sing that song, How Great Thou Art. These heavenly treasures of the knowledge of God we have in these earthen vessels. Much, much treasure. Thinking upon these, I'm going to ask Brother Jerry Lambert to come and dismiss us. I watched as it was to the birth of the child. As to perspectives of that which we had spoken concerning that today, and that, of course, that I would like to have elaborated on. As to when Brother Lambert opened the door, the rent veil, and through the door come the little one, the little bitty toddler, as to the birth of the child in Dakota, as to what he had to do with. And the little bitty child all by himself come walking in. And Brother Lambert having to do with what he does as to Calvin the rent veil. And then, of course, feeling to call him up here even now. Think on it. Many things we'd like to say. Jesus said, you're dull of hearing. He would like to tell me many things. But I cannot be dull of hearing if I am to receive it. The eyes of your understanding being enlightened, that he, the Spirit, might lead you into all truth and all righteousness, as to the redemption of your body, that you might not have to die nor sleep, but can go through that change. See, as Brother Jerry comes to pray, think on these things. Ask God to enlighten your minds, to give you that spirit of revelation of these great, wonderful things. The Bible said that's been hid from the foundation of the world. All of a sudden they're brought to view, they're brought to light. Instigated in the mind of God before the world ever was and brought to
light at Calvary, the Bible said, given to us in Christ before the world ever was. Preached down through the church ages that we might be able to comprehend them unto the transformating of mind, the translating of the spirit, and the transfiguration of our body. You know, I found the translation of my spirit, folks, and it was translated marvelously by faith through the knowledge of calling on the name, translated into the kingdom of God. And my mind has found the transformation of that progressiveness from Egypt over to Canaan after the blood has been applied to the translation of my spirit down in Egypt, the land of garlic and onions. And I found the transformation. And now I'm coming to the ultimatum of the transformation. And at the end of that, it's like the covenant. It reaches over, that transformating reaches over as a rainbow, as a covenant, as to the tutoring of the church ages, even from the instigation of the church to the coming of the Lord. Reaching over from my spirit as to Calvary, my birth, and over to the end of the church ages as to my redemption of body. And that rainbow, the transformating of the enlightening of light, for within the light is all the colors of the attribute of the refinery of his innermost being. And that light breaking forth as to a rainbow reaching over from the prism of God, as we explained in another message. That transformating from my inner being. The songwriter said, I see a bridge. I see a bridge reaching over. He said, whereby I can cross all trouble and strife. So then the great bridge, bridging over to where that, though I've been translated in my inner man, I have to travel that great bridge of graduality as to the graduation of the transformation, as to the ultimatum, as to the diplomacy of him, until I reach the redemption of the body, from one side to the other side, from one body to the other body, from one side of eternity to another side of eternity, going over the bridge. And I went through that transformation. And then there comes a transfiguration. The church has gone through that, you know. That is to say, as to one part, as to a second part, it says to the tutoring, as to that which is in the wilderness, even with the serpent's bite, as to an understanding, as to differentiation, as to light showing up darkness, and then is seen the serpents. And then the serpents receive strength, as to sin, the strength of the law, the letter that killeth, bringing the sentence of death, thou shalt surely die, even the knowledge of the letter, even in our mind of carnality. To be carnally minded is death. But then comes the spiritual gift of life. For my words are spirit and life. The voice of the resurrection. He that can hear my voice. Not the minister speaking, but the voice. And the voice is calling to the innermost. If you can see always the things that the Father does. If you can hear my voice, then come forth, Jesus said, concerning Lazarus, thou that sleepest. So then they sang the song of sleep in Jesus. Oh, how sweet and undisturbed repose. So then the rainbow reaches over. Where are we now? Couldn't be but one other thing. The great mountain experience of the transfiguration, wherein there appeared Moses and Elijah. For we're at that place now. For the two prophets must come. What does that mean to us? That means a lot, folks. When you think of the two candlesticks as to the Jesus and the Christ, and you think of 12 people as kings, as in the millennium, why not 24? Because, as I said today in explaining some things, some trees, they are trees on the surface, and that's all that you see. But some trees, the roots reach just as far in the ground, and they are a tree under the ground. The only thing is, the roots that sprout out as a tree on the top just bring forth leaves, that's all. You don't see the inner man, you just see the outer man. But the inner man is the strength of the outer man. Was it not for the roots underneath, the tree could not stand the contrary winds? We say that of doctrines as to the trees of God. So you say, what do you mean, Brother Pike? I mean that there's 12 apostles in the millennium, but there's 12 that is shown up on the other side in the spirit. Those 12 apostles as in the millennium as to the natural Jew, which we're not going to elaborate on, but the 12 that's on the other side, that makes 24. When you get into the spirit, there's a spiritual man in each one of them apostles as to his Jewish body. And there is a spiritual judge as there is a natural judge. As to Jesus, so is the Christ as to the spiritual 12. And there's 24 elders as to kings that's around the throne. When the body's redeemed, they all come together as in heaven, so in earth. He said, what do you mean by that? I mean that whatever's taking place in earth right now, you know that's what's taking place in heaven. If you can see what's taking place in heaven, you automatically know what's taking place in earth. The body, the spirit, side by side, they run a parallel. So all things in a parallel, all things in a sequence, there's something that's taking place now. I know that kind of loses some of you. Maybe tonight we can get back on the trail. Brother Branham said, ride that trail one more time. While Jerry's coming to pray with you, think these things over. Be careful today. Pray. Watch. Jesus said, watch and pray. Don't just pray. Watch also. Don't just watch. Pray also. Look well to your going. Know where you're going and why you're going. Don't let your gullible desire of that which is the oppression of Lucifer swallow you up to do that which is contrary to God and bring the judgments or to give place to the devil to hurt you.